Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. The past 10 years have seen renewed public interest in the search for extraterrestrial life, stimulated in large part by the discovery in the mid-1990s that fragments of Mars delivered to Earth as meteorites contained small structures reminiscent of microbial life. The proper interpretation of those structures remains controversial, but it's certain that nothing would alter our view of humanity and our position in the cosmos more than the discovery of alien life. The search for life in the cosmos begins with our understanding of life on Earth. This understanding has grown enormously over the past century. It's now clear that although Terran life is conveniently categorized into millions of species, studies of the molecular structure of the biosphere show that all the organisms that have been examined have a common ancestry. There's no reason to believe, or even to suspect, that life arose on Earth more than once, or that it had biomolecular structures that differed greatly from those shared by the Terran life that we know. Our only example of life has been quite successful in dominating our planet. Earth itself presents a variety of environments, some very extreme by human standards. One lesson learned from studies of Terran biochemistry and its environmental range on Earth is that the life we know requires liquid water. Wherever a source of energy is found on Earth with liquid water, life of the standard variety is present. That observation has already helped to guide NASA missions through the directive to follow the water in searching for life in the solar system. Environments where liquid water might be or might have been present are high on the list of locales planned for NASA missions. Excitement runs high when sites are found where the geology indicates with near certainty the past presence of liquid water in substantial amounts. As pragmatic as this strategy is, scientists and laypeople alike have asked whether it might be parochial or terracentric. As Carl Sagan noted, it isn't especially surprising that carbon-based organisms breathing oxygen and composed of 60% water would conclude that life must be based on carbon and water and metabolize free oxygen. The depth and breadth of our knowledge of Terran chemistry tempts us to focus on carbon because Terran life is based on carbon. If Terran life had provided silicon-based molecules, then our knowledge of silicon-based chemistry would now be advanced. But this natural tendency towards terracentricity requires that we make an effort to broaden our ideas of where life is possible and what forms it might take. Indeed, basic principles of chemistry warn us against terracentricity. In fact, it's actually pretty easy to conceive of chemical reactions that might support life involving non-carbon compounds, occurring in solvents other than water, or involving oxidation-reduction reactions without dioxygen. Both the public at large as well as the scientific community have become increasingly interested in authoritative perspectives on the possibility of life in environments in the solar system that are very different from the ones that support life on Earth. Of particular interest is the idea of life supported by weird chemistry in exotic solvents and exploiting exotic metabolisms. To NASA, those ideas would help to guide missions throughout the solar system and, perhaps even more importantly, permit them to recognize alien life if it's encountered, regardless of how it's structured. In broadest outline, the National Research Council finds no compelling reason for life being limited to water as a solvent, even if it is constrained to use carbon as the scaffolding element for most of its biomolecules. In water, varied molecular structures are conceivable that could, in principle, support life. But it would be sufficiently different from life on Earth that it would be overlooked by unsophisticated life detection tools. Evidence suggests that Darwinian processes require water or a solvent like water if they are supported by organic biopolymers such as DNA. And although macromolecules using silicon are known, there are few suggestions as to how they might have emerged spontaneously to support a biosphere. For generations, the definition of life has eluded scientists and philosophers. Many have come to recognize that the concept of definition itself is difficult to define. Chemical models of non-Earth-centric life reveal much about what the scientific community considers possible, particularly regarding ways in which systems organize matter and energy to generate life. Thus, truly weird life might utilize an element other than carbon for its scaffolding. Less weird, but still alien to human biological experience, would be a life form that doesn't exploit thermodynamic disequilibria that are largely chemical. Weirder would be a life form that does not exploit water as its liquid milieu. Weirder still would be a life form that exists in the solid or gas phase. In a different direction, yet also outside the scope of life that most communities think possible, would be a life form that lacks a history of Darwinian evolution. Some features of Terran life are almost certainly universal. In particular, their requirement for thermodynamic disequilibrium is so deeply rooted in our understanding of physics and chemistry that it's not disputable as a requirement for life. Other criteria aren't so absolute. Terran biology contains clear examples of the use of non-chemical energy. Photosynthesis is the best known, although energy from light is soon converted to chemical energy. Silicon, in some environments, can conceivably support the scaffolding of large molecules. Even Darwinian evolution is presumably not an absolute. Humankind will be able to perceive and solve problems in human biology without needing to select among random events, thus sparing the species the need to remove unavoidable genetic defects through the death of individuals. That will make the human biosphere no less living, even to those who make Darwinian evolution central in their concept of life. Likewise, we can easily conceive of robots that are self-reproducing or computer-based processes that grow and replicate. Here, information transfer is not based on a specific molecular replication, but on a replication involving information on a matrix. Whether such entities will be called life remains to be seen. What is clear is that the scientific community does not believe that any form of life could have arisen spontaneously from inanimate matter. At the very least, its matrix would have to be constructed initially by a chemical, Darwinian life form arising from processes similar to those seen on Earth. Again, it's not clear whether those views are constrained by our inability to conceive broadly from what we know, or whether they reflect true constraints on the processes by which life might emerge in natural history. Given the inevitability of human missions to Mars and other locales potentially inhabited by alien life, a clear understanding of the potential scope of life will improve researchers' chances to study such life before a human presence contaminates it or, through ignorance or inaction, destroys it. In attempting to address the key question, are we alone, NASA commissioned the National Research Council to address the following questions. What can be authoritatively said today about the limits of life in the cosmos? And what Earth-based research must be done to explore those limits so that NASA missions would be able to recognize, conserve, and study alien life that's encountered? In response to those questions, the National Research Council specifically recommends that researchers need to spend more time exploring variations of the requirements for life. NASA and the National Science Foundation should support origin of life studies, which will help scientists to determine if life can exist without water or in environments where water is only present under extreme conditions. Research should also focus on how organisms break down key elements, as even non-carbon-based life would need elements for energy, structure, and chemical reactions. The search for alien life should not exclude additional research into terrestrial life. Through examination of extreme environments such as deserts and deep under the oceans, studies have determined that life exists essentially anywhere water and a source of energy are found together on Earth. Field researchers should therefore seek out organisms with novel biochemistries and those that exist in areas where vital resources are scarce to better understand how life on Earth truly operates. This improved understanding will contribute greatly towards seeking Earth-like life where the conditions necessary for its existence might be met, as in the case of subsurface Mars. Space missions will need to be adjusted so that they increase the breadth of their search for extraterrestrial life. Planned Mars missions, for example, should include instruments that detect components of light elements, especially carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, phosphorus, and sulfur, as well as simple organic functional groups and organic carbon. Recent evidence exists that another moon of Saturn has active water geysers, raising the prospect that habitable environments may exist there and greatly increasing the priority of additional studies of this body. The idea that life may exist elsewhere in the cosmos is exciting and exhilarating. NASA has long given high priority to missions that ask whether extraterrestrial life might exist in the solar system and beyond. As a purely scientific pursuit, it's stimulating and thought-provoking. As a human quest, it may eventually help mankind find its place in the universe. NASA's mission is to pioneer the future in space exploration, scientific discovery, and aeronautics research. Nothing would contribute more to the agency's goal of exploring the cosmos or to inspiring and educating the next generation of students in the hard sciences and engineering than a search for alien life. And nothing would be more unfortunate than to expend considerable resources in the search for alien life and then fail to recognize it if we are ever fortunate enough to encounter it. The Committee on the Limits of Organic Life in Planetary Systems was chaired by John A. Barros, Professor of Biological Oceanography at the University of Washington in Seattle. For more information on the limits of organic life in planetary systems, you may contact the Space Studies Board at the Division on Engineering and Physical Sciences. Their phone number is 202-334-3477. You may also read the full text of this book online free at the National Academies Press. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.